It is time to bring in Tim Luke and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack, and Appraise This. You can find them at TQAG.com on the web. And we say good morning down to the southern part of the United States. Good morning, Tim and Greg.
Good morning.
Tim? I don't hear Tim.
Hello?
I don't hear Tim.
Well, you know, I didn't hear what I just happened to see. It didn't come across as that there was a Skype call. So I just happened to see that it said join call. So I clicked in.
It says two people there, but I'm going to see if I can.
It says he's in Chicago, too, by the way.
It says he's on hold, but I'm going to try to call him here and see what happens.
Okay.
And there's a different icon up for Skype as well, so I was a little worried about that as well. But it says calling Tim Luke, and we'll see. So he might still be.
No, I know he's not. Because we talked last night about
Tim. Tim, are you there?
I am.
There
good
you
morning.
Are. You know, it said good you. Morning. It said you were there about 5 minutes ago, but I guess it was
there was. There was a flutter or something in the Wi-Fi. I had to re-log in, so that might have been what it was.
Okay, I have a flutter in Wi-Fi.
A flutter.
I like that.
Wi-Fi. I'm a fluttering Wi-Fi.
See, you have a nice
word. Is that a technical term?
Yeah, I think it's a term we should use because most people use terms that have four-letter words in there when something goes wrong with Wi-Fi.
Right. Well, especially with technology.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, so now, what are you doing what are you doing in Chicago?
I'm in Chi-Town. We are working on – we have four major projects that are coming to the conclusion that we are – doing our proofing, going through all of our due diligence, getting all the final documents together. So I wanted to make sure that I pulled the whole team together because there are these four of these big projects. Just wanted to make sure that we were all in one spot so we could really be laser focused on getting this done. Yesterday we had a team meeting at 4 o'clock, and for one of the projects, we have a lot of items that we just have to complete, and there was close to 10,000 items in this appraisal. So we're at a good spot, but I mean, Greg, when I come home, you may have a little bit of work to do. We'll see, but we're in a good spot.
Yeah,
one of the things I would like Tim to check out while he's in Chicago is the Van Gogh immersive experience, because I know I think it's in Chicago now, or it might be coming to Chicago, and we want to see it so bad. We missed it when it was here in Florida, but it's also in Pittsburgh and it's going to be in New York. So between one of those three cities,
we'll catch it. Maybe not this trip, but I will be back in the beginning of November because I have a completion of another project, and we'll be here. So,
well, I found out something very interesting about this exhibition. You know, normally when you think of a museum exhibition, you know, everything is hanging on the wall of the same every place that it goes into a museum. But apparently the Van Gogh immersive experience, depending on the venue, they have to adapt the different – it looks different every time. So we might have to see it more than once, which wouldn't that be a shame?
Well, yeah. Well, and it's an interesting thing about this, the way that they're doing this immersive experience is that it's video projections. You are immersed within the artwork, and there's within these cities, and depending on the space, they really customize to that, so that it would encourage people to go to different locations to see the differences and to really experience all of this. I think it's a really fascinating way of experiencing artwork, and depending on the artist. And one of the things, and yes, I'd love to do this, the Van Gogh, and I think that they'll probably do it with some other artists. One other artist I think that they're doing out in Los Angeles is Banksy. They're also doing a Banksy experience, so you can experience his artwork as well. And that was one of the things I wanted to bring up to you, Marshall.
I haven't seen anything at all about the Shredded Painting auction, which was meant to happen a couple of days ago.
Oh, it was in the Washington
Post. Oh, you have it?
Yes, no. Washington Post. It was all over the Washington Post.
Well, I'll forward some of the articles. It's quite amazing.
It's amazing. Really is. So, just to fill in, you've been living under a rock, if you didn't know about this Banksy piece, is that 3 years ago, and we talked about it on the show, and I remember we were out in Arizona when that happened, we were talking about it. The Banksy painting went up for auction for the first time 3 years ago, and as soon as the hammer came down, a mechanism was activated, and 3/4 of the painting went through an internal shredder. So there is part of it. And, of course, the audience at Sotheby's was just – they were gobsmacked, let's just say. And nobody knew what this was. And, of course, it came out, and this was all planned by Banksy. And the new owner was debating whether they were even going to pay the $1.4 million that they paid for it, because now it's a different one. And at that point, we had a discussion about, will it be worth more? And I said, well, of course, it's a whole new piece of art now, and it has all of this spectacle, and it had over 1 billion views on YouTube. You can still see this. The interesting thing is
that's billion with a B.
yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that also I follow Sotheby's on Facebook, and they're outside of their corporate headquarters. They have their flag flying, you know, Sotheby's. But for this sale, they had a portion of it shred, just like painting. So they had this flying. And this time it was estimated, I believe the estimate was 5 to 8,000 or 5 to 8 million. And the actual it sold for $25.1 million. This piece will have an amazing just place in pop culture, but also in art history. It's just it's one of those pieces.
So
it's just really
the guy amazing. Invested a little over $1 million, and in 3 years returned $20 million.
Turn around, I know.
Yeah. And what's
that doesn't happen all the time, people. This does not
I think what's funny about this is the idea was that it was going to be destroyed, and it turns out, and that was Banksy's MO, but it turns out that he probably made it even more famous just by the fact that
it
didn't get completely destroyed, and that the woman who ended up paying for it, she decided she was going to pay every last cent of what it sold for. I don't think at the time that she realized that it would she would recoup so much on her investment. But I'm just wondering, it didn't say in any of the literature if this was a that I saw anyway, that it was a record for a Banksy piece. But it has to be.
I was going to say it has to be. $21 million, it has to be. $25. That's amazing.
And it didn't say also whether or not that included the buyer's premium, because that's a pretty hefty chunk of change for a buyer's premium.
Now, explain to people listening what a buyer's premium is all about.
Okay. Let's say that you sell your Star Wars Boba Fett, and it sells for $1,000. So $1,000 is the hammer price. So and let's say Tim bought it. So as the buyer, he has to pay the auction house a premium. Usually, it's 20 to 25% on the hammer price. So it's $1,000 plus 25%. So the actual price or the value of the piece is $1,000 plus the buyer's premium. So and that's one of the ways that the auction house makes money, because on the back end, let's say that you as the consignor said, you know what? I don't want to pay you 10 or 15% commission on this Boba Fett figure. So I'm going to go somewhere else. And the auction house might say, well, you know what? We will waive your commission for this because we're getting the back end from the new, you know, the buyer's premium. So that's how a buyer's premium works.
All right. I was just, you know, I've heard you guys talk about it, and I've always been afraid to ask the question. I didn't want to appear to be dumb as a wreck.
Oh, no.
But,
no, it's a very good question, Marstrom, because also when we, as appraisers, we have to consider what was the hammer price plus the buyer's premium, because that is what you take into account for fair market value, and that is defined by the IRS. The IRS said it says their in their definition, it's what a willing buyer, willing seller would pay, and they put out an advisory opinion that said that you must also include the buyer's premium. And the reasoning behind that is because every auction house has a buyer's premium, and you could not take that piece out of the auction house without paying that. So it does become part of what that is. Now, because sales tax and everything else is a whole different area, you could also argue, well, you'd have to pay the sales tax. But because that varies at different locations, and you may have a dealer or a resale certificate, so you wouldn't be paying sales tax, they don't include that. They just include the hammer price plus the buyer's premium is what you use when you're looking at comparable sales.
Sometimes, Marshall, if you are looking through sales online, if you go in and you can see what it sold for, it'll say next to the hammer price includes buyer's premium. That's what they're starting to, you know, a lot of the major auction houses and the second tier auction houses are also including in their published results, so that people understand that it didn't just sell for, we'll just use the Banksy, for $25 million. It sold for 25 plus whatever the buyer's premium is. And sometimes the price that you see in the news the newspaper will say this includes a buyer's premium, because it's become something that people were asking about, like, what is a buyer's premium? And so this is one way that they can explain it to people.
All right. Next question for you folks. I'm looking at an article. L.S. Lowry's auction will be sold at Sotheby's. It's a 1958 painting and 1.8 million pounds. It's expected to get Lambshire. Am I pronouncing it right or wrong? He's an artist, I guess.
I don't know.
A painting by L.S. Lowry depicting a packed auction house with a gavel. So 1.8 million pounds. So
sounds like the British version of Banksy.
Well, it does. I mean, I mean, it's a pretty cool painting when you look at it, but it doesn't light my fire. But I guess that's just up to me, you know. But I 1.8 million pounds is what, about $2 million here?
Yeah.
All right, and Turner Auctions, they're going to offer model trains. And we've talked about this more on October 31st. 250 lots of G-gauge trains go up for bid. And I kicked myself because as a kid, my dad loved trains. We had G-train, we had HO, you name it. We had trains all over the place. And I kicked myself because you see some of the prices that these things bring. And there's 215 lots of them. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, trains... Even now, I mean, the market's a different than it was 10 years ago. I mean, these things were like, if they're selling for a lot today, 10 years ago, they were selling for a lot more. But the market seems to be making some sort of a recovery in the past couple of years. And they are very popular. They still are, no matter what. People love. Collectors love to their trains, and there's actually, I think we talked about this in the past, about the personalities of the different types of collectors, you know, for different whatever they collect. Like a teddy bear collector is nowhere close to what a train collector is, or well, a doll collector. Right.
Well, and they're, and that's basically the way they're collecting styles and what they do. With this particular collection, the G gauge, these are Lehman. It stands for, they're LGB trains, and that stands for Lehman Gross Bahn. So it's a German manufacturer, and the G gauge is it's a larger scale. So if you ever saw trains that have a track that were suspended from the ceiling in a bar or at a, you know, if somebody had a train room, it's the larger scale because you can mm-hmm. see it from across the room. So it's these larger scale trains, and it's one person's collection, which is pretty incredible. And so it has a lot of old stock and new stock. It says including there's some new stock customer and wood cabinet displays. And there's also an LGB hot air balloon store display. So it's this individual probably was a dealer or father was a dealer, or a distributor, let's say, was a retailer. And we have a friend who was a retailer, and he had a number of this, our friend Tim Ilyinsky, and he had a number of these items. And he was a big fan of these because they're so realistic, but they also are larger scale than just your typical Lionel, and it just has that just that like you're the actual conductor. You know, and I'm sure they have a conductor hat in here too.
funny you say that. My dad, who didn't like toys or anything like that, he bought us trains and trains and trains, and he had himself made an engineer's denim suit, you know, what the engineers uh-huh. wore, and had his name on it and everything. Like and here was a guy who liked to drink Johnny Walker Black Label, liked to entertain, but you put him by a train set, and he went completely out of his class and just had a great time acting like a kid. And my father never acted like a kid, I can tell you that right now. Never, yeah. ever, ever. So
there's something about trains. There's something about toys. There's something about collecting these objects that we either saw or knew as a kid, that when you're older, it allows you to just tap into that again. And which is great. It's just that inner child, you know, and just say, okay, yeah, with a little bit of abandon and just enjoy this, because it's not as stressful than going back to the real world.
Do you remember the FAO Schwarz store in New York, Marshall?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you remember when you go in, if you look up, yeah. they had a train that went around the entire...
Right.
As a kid, we used to, when we were in the city a lot with my mom and dad, we used to go, that was a regular stop just to keep us happy. We didn't buy much there, but it was a regular stop.
It was really quite an amazing place. And, you know, and the thing is, the doesn't matter where, even then or now, anytime you see a train, a toy train or a model train moving around a track, in a store, any kind of a marketing setup, people stop and look. I mean, there's always been a fascination in this country for trains. And I think they've been romanticized for so long. And there is something, you know, even just to listen, when I grew up, we didn't live too far from one of the railroad that was going through the town. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, you could hear the plaintive sound of the train whistle, and there was just something so compelling about the sound of that, and what little kids love to watch trains. So I mean, it's not difficult to understand why trains are probably one of the most popular collectibles even today.
All right. Now, before we leave, I want to talk. Did you guys view the Christie's auction from London?
No.
It was. It brought in $88 million, and they had a real slick studio set. They put it together like a TV show, and before the auction started, they told everybody to quote, "Project your voice and bid with purpose."
Oh, that's so typically English, isn't it?
Well, it bought in 64 million pounds.
Yeah.
So I guess they bid with purpose. It's more of an indication that shows how online bidding and now presenting these, it's now an accepted practice. It's an accepted practice. I think it's probably as accepted as going to an auction.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. The popularity, I guess, of online bidding now with the major auction houses is, it's almost like an imprimatur with these auction houses. If you see that Christie's or Sotheby's or Bonhams is selling something online,
interesting.
Now listen to this. Listen.
You know that it.
They were so set up and ahead. They started the auction at 2 o'clock UK time. Why did they start it at 2 o'clock? Because it was the peak time to get people from Hong Kong and New Yorkers to get involved in the auction. That's what you call really thinking ahead.
Well, also, if you continue there, it also said that this paid off because only three. There were 40 lots that did this 8 million, first of all, and only three of those 40 lots were sold in the room. The rest went to all those online bidders.
It's an amazing.
I mean, that's a testament right there. That is a testament about online auctions and how they have progressed.
It's an amazing.
Also,
go on, Jim.
Also, the interesting thing is that this was Christie's first in person. So they were holding this in person, and they were also. They're really embracing that hybrid style of auction where you do have people in the room, but there are other people that are tuned in across the internet and across the globe. So it is really making the auction room or the auction room experience a global, not sensation, but a global opportunity that everybody has access.
Well,
and instead of leaving an absentee bid, you're also part of it. So by doing it at a certain time, instead of, you know, the traditional, okay, if it was in the UK, they would do it at 10 a.m., is by doing it later in the afternoon, that just made it more convenient for everyone else. I mean, just, it's fascinating. We're watching this as it develops and commenting on it. And I think in the next couple of years, you're going to see that there will be these major they're going to figure out, here's the formula. And it's not going to be for every auction. This was for their important, one of their important sales that they put together, 40 lots. Because you really couldn't, it may in the future, but I couldn't imagine doing like a 400 lot sale like that.
Yeah.
This is something that would be for higher, I guess, higher profile pieces and higher valued items.
Well, it's you know, technology has really put us in an amazing time where you can purchase just about anything online, from cars to groceries. And now you don't even, there's a thing called Instacart where you don't have to stick to, you can buy anything and Instacart will deliver. We're in an amazing time. And you know what? From when we first started talking about this years ago to now, the timeline is a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be.
And with every year, with technology, it gets shorter and shorter. So it's an exponential reduction of time. I mean,
technology takes over. You, Marshall, I was a little skeptical when this all started, and Tim kept saying, "No, it's gonna be fine." They're gonna pick up, because at the beginning, it's just like I kept saying, "How are you gonna sell art online? Who's gonna believe that this Banksy piece is going to sell for $25 million, and they had online. I mean, I think the woman was, or the buyer was probably in the room, but I mean, it was online bidding. So it's just amazing how it's leaps and bounds.
And what the auction houses have been doing is, especially for these higher end pieces, is that the buyers may fly in to take a look at these things in person. They're providing photographs. They're providing, they have representatives for them go in and do an inspection or some sort of visual, personal inspection so that they see this. So there's a lot of, I think COVID has just really made this all possible, is being able to do this and do it with purpose so that it has this kind of result. So people can bid with confidence. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And I'm here in Chicago, and Heinemann is doing all this week. I think it's Decorative Arts Week. So they're doing a lot of both English decorative arts. Yesterday was silver and some modern design. Today is some other furniture, and I think the rest of the week it's furniture and decorative arts. So it's going to be interesting. But I think that Heinemann had a couple of people who showed up in person, like not just a handful. They are open, but most people have preferred the convenience of being able to not only bid on the phone, but by multiple bidding platforms. And Heinemann has their own app, and you can get it in the App Store, and you just sign up, and you sign up and you can watch. I mean, it is set up that you can see the video and the audio for some sales, and it's really, they make it very easy to place a bid and to see what's coming up. So it's really, I think more and more we're going to see more and more auction houses developing their own app. And Christie's and Sotheby's have their own app too, and that you can view. And Heritage has an app as well. And a lot of the mid-sized to larger auction houses too. But I think that we're going to see more and more of this technology over the course of time, making it that much easier for individuals to watch this on their mobile devices.
All right. Well, it seems like a day-by-day technology takes over, guys. Have a good week, and we'll speak to you next week. And safe travels back from Chicago, Tim.
Thank you, Marshall. Take care.
Have a great week, Marshall.
That article, Marshall.
I'm going to go to it after I'm off the air. All right.
Okay.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tim Luke and Greg Straub, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack. With Appraise This, you can, of course, find them at tqag.com on the web.